Vous êtes avec Radio SBS en français.
Les villes australiennes sont en train de subir de grands changements. De plus en plus de personnes vivent en ville et les experts insistent sur le fait qu'il devient urgent d'adapter nos villes à ces changements. Alors, comment doit-on gérer cet afflux de population, les nouvelles technologies et le réchauffement climatique sans être submergé par tout ça ? Le classement des villes les plus agréables au monde 2015, réalisé par The Economist, a élu Melbourne la ville la plus agréable à vivre au monde. Dans le top 10, on retrouve Adélaïde en 5e position, Sydney en 7e et Perth en 9e position. John Copperstock, éditeur en chef du classement, explique les 5 conditions qui déterminent les critères de viabilité d'une ville.
So we look at stability, that's obviously crime, unrest, the threat from terror or warfare. Then we have healthcare. So, you know, is the public healthcare sector good? Is the private healthcare system good? Are people seen by doctors on time? Then we have cultural environment. Then we have education. So the quality of public and private education. And then we have infrastructure, which is anything from, you know, housing stock to public transport, the road network, and then obviously utilities.
Robert Doyle, le maire de la ville de Melbourne, est fier de la réussite de sa ville.
Yes, it's quite remarkable to be the world's most livable for 5 years in a row. It's very tight, of course. It's 0.1 of 1% between us and Vienna, and then I think about 0.1 back to Vancouver. But nevertheless, it's a very important accolade, and one which we can use extensively in marketing both for international students and for tourism.
John Copperstock explique que les villes australiennes se classent parmi les meilleures à cause de leur faible densité de population.
The cities are mid-sized, so they don't have too many people, too much of a population to cope with. But because they're in developed countries with, you know, large expanse of space between cities, they have a strong infrastructure, their telecommunications and transport infrastructures, you know, they have to develop more quickly. And as mid-sized cities, they tend to also offer, you know, the things that people need to see and do culturally.
Toutefois, les villes moyennes en Australie grandissent rapidement, ce qui crée de nouveaux challenges économiques, environnementaux et de développement durable. Le professeur Edward Blakely est le président des Future City Collaborative au Centre de recherche des Nations Unies à l'Université de Sydney. Selon lui, les villes de banlieue vont au fur et à mesure être remplacées par des gratte-ciels.
People are moving into larger dwelling units that are in apartment buildings, many of these buildings 30, 40, 50 levels. So that means the old playground, which would sustain 100 or 200 people, has to be rethought. And some of these playgrounds may be even in the sky on different levels of the building. And so we're trying to make the Australian city, with our climate, which is very good, but our water and other things are very fragile, adapt to this new form of living, including the use of transportation in different ways.
L'Australie a toujours été connue pour être très dépendante des automobiles. Et le professeur Blakely pense que les villes doivent réfléchir à une autre manière d'utiliser les voitures.
So the automobile should not be used for transportation to work, but it might be used for transportation to other things after work, for shorter trips, and moving jobs closer to where people live. These are programs that we're working on now across Australia, and you can see it with some of the major infrastructure projects going on in Melbourne, where they're improving the rail line and the like.
L'urbaniste estonien Primi Tirpek indique que le modèle de ville compacte est ce vers quoi on s'orientera dans le futur.
We need to get away from the car-centered planning and give more opportunities to more healthier and more sustainable ways of moving around. And this kind of compact city model, this has its future. And I know that, for example, Leipzig in Germany, they are very much promoting it, this kind of very, very local neighborhoods, and that you have everything in a very short distance, public services, schools, kindergartens for your kids, and shops, and all kind of recreational areas. So I think that's where we're moving.
Le professeur Blakely explique que de plus en plus de villes australiennes copient le modèle européen.
In Sydney, where again they're improving both rail, but also creating a city that has more than one center. Parramatta will be another district center. And in Brisbane, the attempt there is to use the river and better ways for both transport and to put dwelling units along it to make a spine for better living. So these are planned activities. They're not accidents. They're very carefully thought out to preserve energy, to increase the amount of work, and to make Australian cities more competitive.
Le professeur Brendan Gleeson, directeur du Melbourne Sustainable Society Institute à l'Université de Melbourne, s'accordent sur le fait que l'on doit utiliser des moyens de transport plus écologiques, tels que marcher ou faire du vélo.
If we can engineer that shift and quickly, it will vastly improve the prospects for greenhouse mitigation. It won't be enough on its own, but it'll be a huge contribution. It will also make our cities more functional, efficient, because if we continue down the road of car dependency, we're just going to have more and more congestion. We can't build our way out of congestion, more and more dysfunctionality and all the diseconomies that come from that model, which has really run its course.
Le professeur Gleason affirme que la principale source d'émissions de gaz à effet de serre provient des transports et des logements.
So we have to do a lot better in reducing the emissions from those sectors. And secondly, the other major task of our, I guess, greening necessity and commitments is to prepare our cities for the climate change that is locked in. Our cities are going to be warmer, drier places with more extreme heat events, and they're going to experience sea level rise. And so we need to move urgently to adapt those cities and make them resilient in the face of those changes.
Et un exemple de ces changements en matière d'écologie est le travail d'adaptation climatique initié par le Conseil de la ville de Melbourne, qui a pour but de rendre le centre-ville plus vert. Pour Robert Doyle, le maire de la ville de Melbourne, cette initiative a pour objectif d'anticiper d'éventuels changements climatiques à Melbourne.
Sustainability, our environment. I mean, we plant an extra 3,000 trees every year in the centre of the city. We're tearing up asphalt to turn it into green open space. We're retrofitting buildings for energy efficiency. The new buildings we're building, like the library at the dock in Docklands, which is a carbon neutral six-star building. So the environmental sustainability of the city, I think, is very important.
Augmenter le volume d'arbres est une façon de réduire l'impact des épisodes d'extrême chaleur, mais ce n'est pas suffisant, comme l'explique le professeur Gleason.
There's an example of one central city government that's already moving on this, but we need a much more widespread initiative and response within our cities on this, and really, to some extent, state governments that are going to have to lead on this, because they still, at the moment, have their principal responsibility for managing our cities. Of course, that's not to let the Commonwealth off the hook. It needs to come back to the field, if you like, and it needs to support the states in managing these kind of threats to our cities.
Le professeur Gleason indique que la population australienne va continuer d'augmenter et qu'elle pourrait atteindre 40 millions dans les 50 prochaines années si la tendance reste la même. Les Nations Unies ont publié en 2014 un rapport sur les perspectives d'urbanisation dans le monde qui prédit d'ici 2050 qu'au moins 93% des Australiens vivront en zone urbaine. Selon le professeur Blakely, les villes intelligentes vont impliquer la nécessité d'utiliser plus de technologies et de sciences de manière créative. À Sydney, plusieurs projets de technologies intelligentes sont en cours, et notamment un à Bondi Beach.
That beach receives millions of visitors, both from internal and external. To move the waste from that beach area every day costs millions of dollars. We're instituting a new program where that waste will now be collected underground. Using vacuum tubes and pushed underground and then from underground compacted, some of it recycled. So can you imagine when you throw your waste around away, there won't be a garbage can anymore. There'll just be a little tube, it sucks it away, and the next thing you know, it's made into some new energy rather than spending all that money to move it.
Ces nouvelles technologies permettront aussi d'avoir de meilleurs bénéfices économiques et sociaux. D'après le professeur Blakely, le secteur minier, la fabrication et les usines seront remplacés par des industries basées sur le savoir. Sa vision du futur implique un monde où les emplois seront créés par l'homme au lieu d'être créés pour lui. Alors, comment cette économie en réseau décentralisé affecte-t-elle notre qualité de vie? Le professeur Blakely donne son explication.
Now, there are possibilities, it's happening in some places, where people are working more from or near home, so they have relationships that they can build in their own neighborhood and their clubs and associations. It also helps in a very important way, and that is cultural integration in places like Liverpool in the Sydney region, where there are 130 different communities. So the skills of people that where you had to know one single language is no longer the case. You can use your skill, your language background as part of a new economy. So neighbors that used to fear one another are now allies.
Mais la création de ces villes intelligentes pourrait nuire à l'Australie rurale. Les industries agricoles emploieront très peu de personnel, alors que les industries d'extraction n'auront que du personnel fly-in, fly-out, comme l'explique le professeur Blakely.
There will be no future for the very small places, I want to be quite honest. But there will be a future for the intermediate towns, the Tamworths and places like this that create the living center. And from there, people will work and use the land, using equipment, using robots and things like this. But the old movie rural community is probably gone forever. The link among the smaller communities in the major cities are going to be fast trains.
Adrian Paulsen, un designer norvégien de l'école d'architecture d'Oslo, indique que les villes les plus attrayantes encouragent leurs résidents à habiter et à travailler dans le même quartier.
A livable city enables a varied group of people to cohabit, live in the same space and work together in order to make their lives better. A good city will enable you and not hinder you. It will assist you and not create barriers to allow you to interact with other people, engage in your community and live a full life.
Selon Robert Dahl, il est nécessaire de planifier nos besoins de demain pour pouvoir créer une ville viable dans le futur.
In a sense, we've got to take lessons from the great men of the past who thought about this as a city for education. They thought about it as a city for employment. They thought about it as a green city. And people like Robert Hoddle, who laid down our streets, thought about the infrastructure that people would need in 150 and 200 years. You know, if our predecessors can think that far ahead, then surely we can do no less for future generations.
Et le professeur Blakely est très optimiste quant à la création de ces villes intelligentes dans le futur.
The biggest reason is Australian cities are good, clean, livable places already. Melbourne is known as one of the best cities in the world. Sydney's not that far behind. We have an export in building cities. There are going to be more than 100 new cities built in China, beyond what they've already built. Several hundred in India. Cities are being built in Malaysia and in Indonesia. We have the model for city building.
Le professeur Blakely partage sa vision d'une ville intelligente dans les 40 prochaines années en Australie.
Boy, I hope I'm around to see it. But let me give you some of my fantasies. And maybe a decade, I will have dial up my driverless car for my car share. It will come to my house, take me to an event. The car will disappear. 20 minutes before I want to leave, I'll dial a number. A car will be out in front and take me home. Also, I will be able to work from any place in the world, which I can do now, with all the advanced technology on the same telephone that I'm using right now.
Le professeur Gleeson, du Melbourne Sustainable Society Institute, décrit une vision futuriste de l'évolution du Harbour Bridge à Sydney et du Melbourne Cricket Ground dans 40 ans.
Might be covered in solar arrays or, you know... It might be doing something more than just simply moving traffic, although of course it moves trains as well. You know, it's a way of just trying to ignite some thinking about a more imaginative and necessary ways of using our public infrastructure to respond to resource depletion.
Alors, qu'en est-il du MCG à Melbourne?
The MCG references to the fact that because we've had so much vertical sprawl in Melbourne recently, there's a real problem about where people in rather defenceless, if you like, high-rise towers in extreme heat events can go to be made safe. So one idea is that they could be moved to football stadiums. But these are just sort of fancies and helping us, though, to think underlying this with some more seriousness and urgency about the scale and the form of response that we need to make our cities safe and resilient.
Marie Morel, SBS French.
Vous êtes avec Radio SBS en français.